Thank you, and I also want to thank the panel for the invitation to present today. Although my title is Intersection of Science, Epidemiology, and Delivery, probably a better title would be The One Chance in Our Lifetime to Get Lung Cancer Screening Right. I have no conflicts to disclose. So my presentation is on a slightly different tact than the other presentations. This case is actually more describing an opportunity for the near future. Major changes are likely coming for lung cancer screening. And if epidemiology and policy can inform one another as we implement a new screening regimen, then we have a chance to significantly reduce disparities in mortality rates with respect to lung cancer. So my objective with this case is to show that disparities in lung cancer mortality rates can be reduced or have a possibility of being reduced through low-dose CT screening. So as we can see, more deaths occur from lung cancer than colorectal, breast, and prostate combined. More women will die from lung cancer this year than from breast cancer. Lung cancer is the number one cause of cancer death among both men and women. And the five-year survival rate is pretty abysmal, especially for metastatic cancer, which is in the single digits. So this is the kind of the epidemiology shotgun of lung cancer. Obviously, whenever we talk about lung cancer, we're generally talking about smoking. About 85% of all cancers are associated with smoking in some way, shape, or form, as well as some other causes, which are much less so than smoking, except perhaps for asbestos exposure. So how can screening alleviate the disparities in lung cancer outcomes? First, let's look at some known disparities with respect to lung cancer. African-American men have a markedly higher incidence of lung cancer, and lung cancer incidence between groups of women are much less different. Some of the observed differences in incidence can be attributable to historic smoking prevalence. Current smoking prevalence is similar between African-American men and white men. However, when we talk about lung cancer, there's a 20-year latency period, so what we really need to look at is historical smoking prevalence. As we can see from this slide of the tobacco use supplement, African-American men have a higher rate of prevalence, especially in 92 and 93, which is about 20 years from now. And we see that the prevalence of smoking is decreasing over time, where we get to the point of time where we are today, which are they're essentially the same. The smoking prevalence from Native American and American Inuit is significantly higher than everyone else, but we don't see that similar increase in incidence with respect to that group. Now, looking at lung cancer mortality rates, over the last 10 years, we have the rate. Is this here? Let me use a pointer. So on the right-hand side here, we have the rate per 100,000, okay, for both men and women. And on the x-axis, we have time, years. So black men have higher mortality rates than white males, but it's declining at a slightly faster rate than their white counterparts, which relates to the decreasing smoking prevalence that we just talked about. However, there remains a wide gap of about 15 per 100,000. Women have more similar mortality rates with respect to race across racial groups, and those rates have been relatively stable over time. So African-American men have higher incidence of mortality from lung cancer than other racial groups. And while part of this reason is historical smoking prevalence, currently African-Americans and Hispanics present with late-stage disease and thus have worse outcomes. They're also more likely to delay treatment. Higher mortality rates are also observed in rural and impoverished areas, which indicates a possible access of care issue, as well as being an independent environmental contributor to poorer health. So if we're going to use screening to help address this disparity in lung cancer mortality rates, then the issues regarding access of care have to be addressed. Looking just at those who receive surgery, these individuals usually have early stage disease. And when access is timely, their survival rates are similar across racial groups, given age and income. Individuals are equally likely to be offered surgery, irrespective of race, at least in the Medicare-insured patient population. However, those in poverty are less likely to get to a surgeon or get to a specialist. In a single institution study, they found that after doing a good job of controlling for clinical variables that tell whether or not you're likely to be offered surgery, the primary cause in differences in the observed surgical rates, over here in the far right, was refusal to go under the knife. This highlights a significant issue of trust with respect to the healthcare system, as well as the healthcare providers, and the doctor-patient relationship. Moving to screening, to date, there's no recommended screening test for lung cancer. Colorectal, breast, and prostate each have a test available to them. And screening in each of these cancers has helped reduce the prevalence of mortality. However, in 2010, the National Lung Screening Trial was concluded early after the investigators found a 20% reduction in lung cancer mortality. The randomized trial participants were randomized between low-dose CT scans and chest x-rays. There were three scans were performed at one-year intervals, and here we see an example of a growing cancer found on a CT scan. The NLST found that CT scans discovered more cancers than chest x-rays, which eventually resulted in a 20% reduction in lung cancer-related deaths. So for any screening program to reduce mortality, the physician has to find the cancer, find it early, and treat it. This combination is the only chance we have for both longer survival and greater chance of a cure. So the charcoal portions in this graph represent screening-detected lung cancers. The light gray cancers are those that are essentially false negatives. And the blue are the cancers that occurred after the three-year trial. Here we see that there's a stage shift on the left-hand side of discovered and treated cancers found by CT scans when compared to chest x-rays. So the CT found more stage 1 disease. And stage 1 disease is surgically treatable, and currently, only surgical resection of the cancer offers a possibility for a comprehensive long-term cure. There are a number of important secondary results from the National Lung Screening Trial that we have to keep in mind, especially if we're going to implement a screening program. First of all, as you can see, the false positive rate of the CT scans was, to say the least, high. Even after extensive workup, 24% of the invasive procedures to diagnose cancer resulted in a benign disease. Also, surgical diagnosis of lung cancer is unlike other types of cancer. There is a 1.3% mortality rate. In comparison, breast, colon, and prostate mortality rates for diagnosis is about 1 in 10,000, the risk for going under general anesthesia. Finally, these results were produced, and this research was performed at the top hospitals and the top cancer centers and among the top specialists in thoracic care in the United States. So in summary, the recently concluded National Lung Screening Trial found annual screening with low-dose CTs reduced cancer mortality, found more early-stage disease, and this requires about 320 persons to be screened to save a life. However, a number of important policy and healthcare questions remain, including overdiagnosis, the cost-effectiveness of the screening program, or if smoking cessation during the screening can influence individual behavior. Now, after the NLST results were published, clinical and patient advocate groups came out in support of lung cancer screening based upon the eligibility and risk stratification found in the National Lung Screening Trial. Each of these groups was against CT screening prior to the results being published. So the proposed guidelines and the population eligible to be screened includes those only in the high-risk category. These are at least 55 years of age with at least 30 pack years of smoking, and they can't have stopped smoking for 15 years. All right. So if you've stopped smoking for more than 15 years, you're actually in the moderate risk category. Or they're at least 50 years old, have smoked 20 or more pack years, and they have an additional risk factor. However, as we know, cancer screening generally has been in the news, generally in a confused and conflicting and negative light. The U.S. Preventive Services Task Force is currently reviewing its previous recommendation against CT screening. and we expect an announcement of this sometime in 2013. And the reason why this is important, the reason why the U.S. Preventive Services Task Force is important, is that in the Affordable Care Act, the task force was given the power by Congress to determine which activities to prevent and detect disease must be covered by insurance. Any recommendation by the task force that finds that the benefit from the intervention is highly likely to be substantial, which is grade A, or has a high certainty of a net benefit that is moderate, or moderate certainty of substantial benefit, which is grade B, then that service must be covered by insurance. So the process that the task force uses to review the medical evidence and make recommendations was recognized within the Act, and all recommendations that provide evidence of grade A or B have to be paid for by insurance. So, since we're likely to be in a brave new world of lung cancer screening, how can screening reduce mortality disparities? African-American men and Hispanics present with late-stage disease, but they have similar outcomes after surgery. If we were to implement a screening regimen where the screening rates are similar to those that we now observe among white women and African-American women in breast screening, which are actually very, very similar, then we can find and treat more lung cancer. However, this optimism is predicated on being able to get people screened and into the specialist's door and overcoming the distrust in the healthcare system as well as in the doctor-patient relationship. So, beginnings are always perilous times. And as we implement a screening program, we don't need to reinvent the wheel. We can stand on the shoulder of our predecessors and other screening programs. Community outreach to address issues in the doctor-patient relationship and healthcare system, as well as to help generate high and similar screening rates across all populations, is one obvious area where existing program implementation success. Screening can also act as a pivotal moment to get the person to stop smoking, or it might encourage a false sense of security and actually reinforce current smoking. Given the issues of access and short supply of thoracic specialists, we will also obviously need to monitor access and quality of care. And when thinking back to Dr. Davis's and the other presentations that are going to occur, many of these questions are not purely epidemiological. They lie in the implementation of that evidence, in the health service research and policy and program measurement, which is inherent in policy implementation. We need to use each of these in this once-of-a-lifetime opportunity. I just want to thank the members of the panel, as well as the American College of Epidemiology, and especially Dr. Ross Brownson and Washington University, who hosted us in 2010, which brought forward this case on cancer screening. And I'll be happy to take any questions. Good question. So in the National Lung Screening Trial, there was actually a 6.7% reduction in all-cause mortality, which was actually kind of surprising. It was quite high. So they found a lot of other disease of the chest when they went under a screening program.
Two questions, both about economics. CT scans are sort of expensive. Mm-hmm. And how much does it add? And where is the benefit and cost-benefit ratio on the screening? And also, that's one. And second, is there an estimate of how many more CT scans would be needed if population eligible to be
Those are both excellent questions. So under the current criteria, under the high-risk criteria, there are 8 to 11 million Americans that would fit that high-risk criteria. The current guidelines also say that you need to be screened annually for as long as you can undergo surgery. So it's not just a three-year screen and you're done. It would continue. A CT, interestingly enough, if you go to Cleveland Clinic or Mayo Clinic, MD Anderson, you can get a $90 CT scan because they know how to just, similarly with prostate screening. They know how to get, that's how they get you into their system and increase their care. Generally speaking, it's $300 a scan. There have been back of the envelope estimates in the mid-billion-dollar for the entire, not just the CT scans, but for the entire cost. There's not been anything published to date about cost efficacy. There was a study that was recently published in Health Affairs, and it used similar criteria, but not quite the same. It didn't use the actual NLST data. It used similar criteria, and the cost-benefit analysis there was about $30,000 per saved life in that realm, which is not bad. However, the data with respect specifically to the National Lung Screening Trial should be out there any time, and Dr. William Black, I believe, will be the senior author on that. So that's one to look for.
Quick question. I work in the area of radiation assessment. Do these CT scan machines, are these the same machines that are used for regular CT scans, or do you have to get a new machine? Can you just turn down the dial? And secondly, what is the dose in millisieverts for CT scans?
So that's another really good question. So there should be a publication regarding radiation exposure. The low-dose CT scans, which is the serial cyclic CT scan, actually has about one-third the dose of a normal CT scan. And the new generation, it is not, you can use the same scanner, it's a different program, literally. Although the newer scanners are better, especially the newer PET combined PET CT scans, but that's a completely different expense. It's about $3,000 to $4,000 for a PET CT scan. But the newer ones are even less. However, when we talk about population-wide, that's a non-trivial amount of radiation exposure. But that's again, they did the cost-benefit analysis with respect to the national exposure, and it was still positive.
Thank you. Mm-hmm.